The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
Welcome to Holly's Digital Advice, where business owners explore all that is digital and a little bit more. We're going to speak with Harry Gold today. And, you know, we always talk about social media, and that's part of what we do. But, you know, what makes it special? What makes it different? And how do you pick the right company? And Harry Gold is CEO and founder of Overdrive Interactive, an award-winning digital agency specializing on everything, you know, online marketing, online media, SEO, all the creative juices that make a business owner like you a success with their social media strategy. So, Harry, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, it was a little rocky this morning. Our first guest didn't show up, but I'm glad I could call you on a dime. And so your company is pretty much a big fish with huge clients such as Harley Davidson and Dow Jones and Samsonite. Now, let's go back to 2001. Were you just a guppy experimenting back then?
To go back to the sort of the start of our company, you know, we were a guppy because it was me and a couple of friends, and we'd been working together at various agencies for a long time. So while we were a guppy and we are still experimenting as much now as we were back then, we did have a lot of sort of big agency, big client experience. So that really helped us to bring things together pretty quickly, but certainly we did not start off with huge clients like Samsonite or Bazooka Candy Brands or IBM or people like that. We like anyone, started out with clients who were willing to take a chance on us as a new company.
So what was it like back in 2001, and what kind of services were you providing?
Sure. It's funny because, you know, the economy is so bad now. We had the big crash beginning of 2009, but digital seemed to survive those turbulent times pretty well. Back in 2001 was the internet bubble burst, so everyone working in digital, I mean, half the people I knew were out of work. So believe it or not, it was actually pretty easy to start a business then. Sometimes recessions are real opportunities because I was able to pull together a lot of really talented people because they weren't working, and they weren't demanding super high salaries. So we were able to actually come together very nicely and work at a low cost, but we ramped things up very quickly. So back then our core services, and actually they're still some of our core services today. Back then we very much focused on helping clients access that critical moment in the search engines when consumers were looking for what they sold. So, you know, of course, you know, Google AdWords had just come out, so we were helping clients, manage their Google AdWords. And at that time, there was something called Overture, which got bought by Yahoo. So managing their Yahoo paid search, managing their Google paid search, and managing their search engine optimization or the way that we enhance their website so they pop in those organic listings. So that
Back then, Harry?
Yep, sure. I mean, SEO
did you call it that, or is it just something that you did?
No, we called it SEO. It was and I will tell you, it was a lot easier then. Everyone's doing SEO now. It is much harder. You have to produce much more content. You got to get a lot more links. You have to have a lot more stature online and in the real world to really pop in the search engines. So, you know, back then, I mean, we could pick basically any keyword and get our clients right to the top. So we were able to become heroes very quickly. I mean, I'll give you an example. One of our first clients was a company called Symmetricom, and they did a lot of print, and they spent $1,500 with us, and we did a Google program with them. And we drove more leads with that $1,500 than they got with their whole print program for the whole year before. Now, that was also in the day when you could get Google clicks for 20 cents. Those same clicks are probably $4 or $5 now.
So 20
again,
Yes. Oh, my.
Yeah, because no one was bid. I mean, you know, it wasn't as competitive. So if you got into the business back then, I mean, you had an advantage. We were able to go into any company and say, what? You're not doing Google AdWords. Oh, my God, here we go. We'd bid on their keywords. We'd put up fantastic landing pages that encouraged desired behavior. If you were trying to get leads, we were really good, and we still are really good at creating pages that got people to do what we wanted them to do. So if it was filling out a form to get a quote or set up a demo or something like that, we could do it. And we could literally drive hundreds of leads into our clients' sales funnels. And their salespeople, you know, this was new back then, they were like, what just happened?
They thought you were mega gods, didn't they?
Right. So we were able to go in and, you know, experiment with very small budgets and create miracles and really move the needle for our clients. So that obviously accelerated our growth. Now it's different. It's so competitive.
Now you got to really work.
I'm sorry?
I said, now you got to really work.
Oh, yeah. You really got to know what you're doing, and you've got to manage your clients' dollars super effectively. You know, and consumers are more jaded on the whole process. They don't, you know, they really have to have a reason to click on your banner or a reason to click on your paid search ad, and your landing page has got to deliver, you know, serious value to get them to do what you want them to do.
And also, Harry, is that a lot of what you did was kind of internal, not external. Not everybody was doing that. Now, everyone has white papers. Everyone has information to just show people like myself, people who could be your clients, how to do it. So everyone is kind of getting their own little video recorder. They know the terms. I mean, the landscape has completely changed.
Sure. I mean, you know, the landscape has not only changed from the standpoint of search being harder and more expensive, you also now have social, and what social's doing is creating so much more content on the web that it's actually making search harder because there's so much more clutter. But at the same time, you know, search and social are attached to the hip, because if you're a smaller size company and you're putting out white papers or guides or how-to or content and blog content, a lot of times, even though that might be social media marketing activity, all the stuff you're making and then you're tweeting about it and you're posting about it on Facebook and putting it, you know, promoting it on LinkedIn, and bloggers are finding it and they're putting it up on their blogs, success in social is often realized through search. So someone's searching for something that you do, they find mention of a white paper or a guide or a checklist that you've published and some bloggers talking about it, and they actually find you in search through a blogger who's talking about it that links back to your site. So, you know, you not only now have to optimize your website for search engine optimization, making sure you have good keywords and things like that in your content, you have to optimize the content that you're trying to distribute out on the web. You have to infuse that with good keywords.
All right, so
back
up. You
have to make that content valuable.
So back up, Harry, because what you just said is a lot. And, you know, we're lucky, especially if you're just banging on the computer at home, you know, to get the article out. But what you're saying is that, okay, a small business owner, they have a website. They usually have a web guy. They say, you know, throw in those keywords, and you're lucky if the small business owner knows about keywords, but let's say they do. And then they're going to write the blog themselves. You're saying that it has to be keyword rich, and it has to be, that knowledge needs to be infused into the blog before it goes out.
Sure. Let me give you a really easy example. for web content. If you are a, let's say, you know, like me, you're a digital marketing firm. Instead of saying our services, you say our digital marketing services as the header on our page.
Because that's a key word.
Right. You know, look for those opportunities to embed those high-value keywords in your headers and articles. Don't say our services or the things we do. It's the digital marketing services we provide, the online marketing services we provide.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, use high-value keywords in the course of your natural language.
But if you use too many, won't you get bumped or flagged or something?
Well, here's the rule of thumb. Use it wisely and use it in a grammatically correct way. If it sounds ridiculous and you're saying digital marketing 10 times in one paragraph, no, that's, you know, not going to fly. But if you use it in a grammatically correct way, because you don't want to sound dumb in your copy either.
No.
And you mix it up. You say digital marketing.
Right.
You say online marketing. You say search engine optimization. You say SEO. You mix it up in your copy. But just be cognizant of the fact that you want to use these high-value terms. Now, let's migrate that philosophy of SEO into social. So if you are writing a blog post, make sure that you're embedding some of those high-value keywords in your title, right? So recently I wrote an article on ClickZ, and you know what I try to do is I try to put things like, I think it was 14 things you can measure in social media marketing, instead of saying social media metrics, right?
Right, because
so
that word wasn't going to fly, metrics.
Right. So if you want to say, you know, measuring ROI for social media marketing, that's a good article title because it's got social media marketing in there, it's got ROI in there, and people are searching for social media ROI. How do I, you know, like what is the ROI?
They're not searching for metrics, that's for sure.
Right. So you want to definitely migrate sort of that usage of high-value keywords, and this is sort of the base-level stuff. But you want to migrate the usage of that into the articles that you write. Let's talk about, you know, other things that are really valuable. Infographics. An infographic is sort of a graphical representation or a chart or a flow chart or something that educates people on a process. I have a saying about business and trying to get your brand out there. If you're a small company, it's really hard to stick in people's minds. But if you teach them something, your company, your brand will stick in their mind because they're learning something that's they're making those synaptic connections that are hardwired into their brain, and your brand will be incorporated into those hardwired connections. So
what about social media, your social media map? To me,
sure.
That is a perfect tool.
Exactly. So that social media map's a great example. So you know, that map is all over the web. If you search on social media map, it's at the top of Google. If you do an image search for Overdrive social media map, you'll see that it's in all of these blogs. If you go to Eric Qualman's blog, if you Google Socialnomics social media map, he put my map on in his blog, and then people using those little Facebook share buttons and LinkedIn share buttons, and
right.
It's been shared hundreds, maybe even thousands of times off his blog. So this is, again, this is success in social being realized through search, because that map is all over the place, and when people are searching for information about social media, they put in social media map, and they find it.
So now, do you think that all of this sharing on the web, all this love fest on the web, has some challenges as far as copyright infringement? Like, do you care that your map is all over the place? You're fine with it, right?
No, I specifically designed it to do that. So
okay.
If you go, I mean, I specifically tell blogs, please grab the image of this, put it on your blog, just please give me a link. And typically people are very respectful of at least giving you a link back. So, you know, there's also this notion, and, you know, trademarks are one thing, but a lot of people feel like, I don't want to give things away. I want to gate it. I want to put it behind a form and make people fill out a form to get it. Excuse me, I got an ambulance coming by my office. So
you live in Boston, right?
Right.
I hear it. I hear that. Yeah. I hear the Boston, I won't call it a twang, just a little different different in your voice.
A little Boston accent. I
yeah,
try
a little
to
Boston
stamp
accent.
It out of my accent. So you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to give my content away. I want to gate it. I want to put it behind a form. Well, it's not an either-or situation. You can have a white paper, a guide, a checklist, an ebook that's gated on your site, and you can also give it away for free in social media. One doesn't preclude the other. Do you know that I found that when we took the map and we gave it away without a form on Facebook, I got more leads on my site because people saw the map. They saw that it was from Overdrive, and they went to my site. And if you want to get it off my site, then you got to fill out a form. But if you happen to find it floating around out in social media land, you know, you can just, you know, get it for free. So it's not either or.
So here, don't you think that all of this, because really blowing off the lid and changes really happened in 2009 when I call it when corporate media and corporate America discovered social media. And when that happened, I think all of our lives changed. And so it does make us think about our property different, you know, our intellectual property differently than we did before. We held on to things, you know, oh, we have to have a copyright. We have to do it this way. Well, all rules are gone now.
Well, I think it depends on what you invest in your content. You know, clearly, if you write a book, you don't want people just taking all that copy and publishing it on their website. If you make a tremendous investment in a piece of content, you should trademark it. You should protect it every way you can. And I think that in social media, typically people know what's, you know, professionals, businesses. Like, we wouldn't take trademark content and then retweet it or post it on a client's Facebook page or something like that. So I think if you're a business, you don't want to take trademark materials without people's permission and republish it. And the same with a media outlet. However, it's about your attitude in producing content. Number one, you want to produce what we call lightweight content. Lightweight content is portable. It's shareable. For example, my social media map is very shareable. It's an image. It's a PDF. You can forward it by email. You can post it to your website. And it really, I mean, just to describe what it is on air, it's kind of like a subway map of social media sites.
It sure
and
is.
Overdrive Interactive is Grand Central Station. And then you have branches going out and listing all the social media sites out there. And just, I'll give myself a little plug. You can go get it at overdriveinteractive.com if you want to see it. But, you know, the point is that I didn't invest weeks and weeks and weeks putting that together like you might a white paper report.
Right.
The other thing is reports that are 15 pages long don't typically go viral.
No.
You know, they don't get socially shared. But images, I want everyone to Google a word called infographic. An infographic is an image of a flowchart, a process. It visualizes information. It teaches people something. These are the things that go viral. Because it's an image, it's a PDF, they get forwarded, and when you have it on a page on your site, you can have one of those Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or Google Plus share buttons where people can go, oh, this is really interesting. I'm going to put this on my Facebook page, not because I care about the business that produced it, but because I think this is an interesting piece of content. And that's what happened with us with the social media map. We did another one about the 2012 elections where we showed the social media presence of all the candidates. People look at that and they go, this is interesting. I'm going to share it. I'm going to tweet about it. I'm going to post it on Facebook. And you can do that with one click by putting these little share buttons next to the content. And by
now
the way,
with Pinterest, you know, that is perfect for that site.
Right, exactly. So yes, Pinterest is another icon you should be adding to if you're a bakery or you're a fashion company and your pictures are gorgeous. So you have pictures of amazing cakes. You should absolutely have a Pinterest button so that people, you know, food and fashion are huge on Pinterest. So you should definitely have that Pinterest button.
Now, Harry, I'd just like to kind of go back to Interactive, Overdrive Interactive, and talk about that company. 37.5 million in annual billings, that's nothing to ignore. So with that said, what makes your services stand out from the rest? You're doing something right.
Well, first let me say that a lot of that is media. So it's not like that's, you know, we buy a lot of Google advertising and we buy a lot of digital advertising for our clients. So a lot of that is obviously money that we spend on that, you know, that's our total billings. But I think what's unique about our company is the way that we blend everything together. You know, the reality is that you can't have good social media marketing if you don't have good creative and content development. You can't have good paid search management if you don't have good creative to develop landing pages that actually get people to do what we want them to do. So under one roof, we have search, both SEO and paid search. We have online media, we have social media marketing, we have email marketing, we have creative and website development. We've taken all those things and blended them together so that clients can go to one place and get the most out of their digital marketing. Our big thing is something we call the brand embrace.
The brand embrace, Harry?
The brand embrace.
Okay.
Here's the thing. This is what we believe is the future of marketing. Okay? It's not about branding anymore. It's about embracing. If you think about even what, you know, what the big companies are doing and what small companies are doing, this doesn't just apply to Samsonite and Harley Davidson. This applies to every business out there. What are we doing with digital? We're trying to get friends and fans on our social media sites and followers and things like that. We're trying to build our email list. We're building our direct mail list. We're trying to build as many connections as we can with consumers so we have those direct connections with them. And then we're communicating with not just our prospects, but our customers, and we're trying to deliver valuable information to them on an ongoing basis. So we not only get new customers, we retain and upsell current customers. So this is the brand embrace. Everything in our in digital media has transformed from making impressions and driving clicks to making connections and driving engagement. And that is the brand embrace. That, you know, transforming from necessarily outbound communication to engagement.
And that engagement is the integration of social media, which was something that we really weren't using 5 years ago like we're using now.
Right. So, for example, one of our clients is Coldies. Coldies is a zinc lozenge, great product, shortens the duration of your cold, and we drove a lot of fans on Facebook. We would say, hey, if you like Coldies, like us, you know, become a fan. And what we were able to do was to get fans to talk about how much they love this product and how they, you know, wouldn't go on vacation without it, or they always used it when they were sick. And we would get them to endorse the product and the reach. So I think, you know, in the first year we got them about 50,000 fans. Not a million fans. We didn't have a huge budget, but 50,000. But the daily reach of that buzz, because we were engaging so effectively with them, was, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. So that's a great example of the brand embrace, that you're taking the customers that love you and you're having a relationship with them, and then you're getting them to advocate for your product.
And I think, Harry, advocating for the product and embracing it is really important, because what's happening is that people are thinking just topically and saying, oh, I need all of these fans. And, you know, they're kind of deciding, like, oh, how many fans does this person have? What's your Twitter following? But really, and what I hear, because, you know, I interview experts every day, the thread I hear, and that's what I tell people when they ask me my advice, is that you could have 1,000 Twitter followers, but if you have half of that amount and they're engaged and they're interacting with you, I'd rather have that active 500 than that 1,000.
Most definitely. There's a metric in Facebook called talking about this. Go to a page, a company fan page in Facebook, and right under where it lists how many fans they have, it shows how many of those fans are talking about that brand. That's what you want to encourage.
The say that again, Jerry. Is, what you know, you say all these important things, and then you just move on. Go back.
There's a metric in Facebook called talking about this.
All right.
Or it's people are talking about this. I'm pretty sure it's called talking about this. Actually, I could go look. And basically, that's what you want to look at.
So how do you get to that metric to be able to see it?
So if you simply go to a company fan page, or you go to your fan page, it'll tell you a few things. Now, if no one's really talking, you have to hit a certain threshold to even have that. But for example,
so if nobody's talking about you, it's not going to do anything.
Right. But if you go to, say, if you go to Facebook and you find a fan page, like if you go to facebook.com/coldeeze, C-O-L-D-E-E-Z-E, facebook.com/coldeeze, you'll see that they have 64,367 likes or fans, and 488 people are talking about this. So that's actually a pretty high engagement rate.
Now, is that one of your clients?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and this is the end of cold season. During cold season,
they're really talking about
much higher.
Yeah.
So we're not in the midst of cold season anymore. So we were able to get this talking about this number much higher when people are suffering from colds. Now, there's another important thing you need to know about Facebook.
And what is
they
that,
have a thing
Harry?
Called EdgeRank.
What is that?
They have an algorithm called EdgeRank.
EdgeRank.
R-A-N-K. Now, I suggest everyone Google EdgeRank. Why is EdgeRank important? EdgeRank determines what information ends up in someone's newsfeed. What you look at when you go into Facebook is your newsfeed. What all your friends and companies that you're interested in and news organizations that you've liked are doing at any given moment. It's your newsfeed. Now, you don't see, if you have 500 friends, you don't see everything. Your newsfeed would go whizzing by. Facebook has an algorithm where it's trying to figure out what it thinks is important to you. So, for example, my sister and I are very close on Facebook. I comment on her page. She comments on my page. Well, so Facebook is saying, well, everything that Harry's sister posts is important. Put that in his newsfeed. But, you know, I might have fanned some company, you know, Tabasco or something. I love Tabasco. But I don't really comment on their posts. So eventually I stop seeing their posts because Facebook is personalizing my feed based on my relationships with all these different friends and fans and things like that. So, or based on my relationship with different companies and people. So the key thing is, if you're a company, you have to get people to engage with your posts. So if you're constantly talking about your products and saying, here's a deal on my product, here's, you know, buy this, buy this, buy this, people can't engage with that. You have to ask them questions too. So for example, one, you know, with Harley Davidson, sure, we would talk about their products, but sometimes we would say, hey, what's your favorite song to party to? And we would get 3,000-4,000 comments in an hour. Or we would say, how old were you when you started riding? Boom, I remember we posted that. We got 3,200 comments. So it's not like we're talking about our brand, but we're engaging with our customers. So what happened is when someone actually responded to that, it strengthened the relationship between Harley Davidson and that fan. So you know, with Coldies, we wouldn't always say buy Coldies. Sometimes we would, you know, we would show, you know, a picture of a dog sneezing or a video of a dog sneezing. Wow, this dog must have a horrible cold. And people thought that was enormously cute. And they would all comment on it.
And so, you know, puppies and cats and babies, if you ever want to make, you know, some kind of impact, just throw a baby or a dog up on post
right.
on Facebook.
Oh, sick. Yeah, stuff like that. So you want to mix it up. I also have a saying, which is, you know, for example, one time my niece drew a dog when she was hanging around my office, and I threw that up on our Facebook page. Oh, my God, we got more reaction to that than anything. But the point is, it's okay to be human. So Facebook and social media is the right place to show the human side of your company, to show, you know, that you're people, that you have kids, you have lives, you do things in the community, and you have a sense of humor. So you really got to mix that up, you know, and depending on your company, like we're a small company, we can do that stuff no problem. We're not a financial company or a pharmaceutical company where everything has to go through compliance.
Wait, Harry, do you consider yourself a small company?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You know, we're 50 people. So in the grand scheme of agencies and things like that, you know, we were just ranked number 12 in the Boston Business Journal area agencies, but we're still compared to, you know, holding companies and big, big agencies, you know, relatively small. So again, I mean, that's another segue is you can be a small company, but you can have a big presence in social media and you don't need a million fans. Most businesses are never going to have a million fans. But what you can do is create content like the social media map that travels through the social media landscape and gets indexed in Google all over the place that teaches people something and embeds information in people's minds.
And I think Zappos has done that pretty well.
Sure. You know, Zappos, but again, you know, they're a larger company, but you know, Zappos has been very good about engaging people in social media, being very zealous about customer service.
And offline too. You know, you go visit them and they say, hey, come in, see our company, look what we do.
Yep.
And that's another thing, Harry, and you can tell me, we only have about 7 minutes left, but I read an article the other day that they said the new trend is really now integrating offline and online and trying to find that balance.
Oh, sure. I mean, one thing is that anything you do can have a digital response mechanism built into it. So, for example, if you have a product on the shelf, there's no reason not to have a QR code on it. So someone could literally take the product, and you could have a QR code that says, see a 60-second video about this product. Boom, you can take your phone, scan it, and watch a 60-second commercial on that product right there, you know, when you're holding it in your hands. Or I saw a great thing in the airport. It was a billboard, and they had rights, you know, basically copyright-free content. I think it was Moby Dick, The Art of War, and some other book. And all you had to do was scan the QR code right from the billboard and download the book right there. And you're bored in the airport. And I literally saw people walk by, stop, scan it, and get the book. And I'm sure when you downloaded the book, you got a little bit of propaganda about the company with it. And it was an ad for a bank. but it had that level of engagement. So,
and Harry, I interviewed a woman, and I don't know if you've heard of Heather Lutz. She wrote a book called Thumbonomics. She did something that I think that she's a trailblazer, and soon everyone's going to start doing it. But in her book, Thumbonomics, at the end of every chapter, guess what she has?
A QR code.
Yep.
Yep. So I think that certainly, one thing I do say about incorporating digital into print is don't just say, hey, visit us on Facebook. Tell people why. Why should they visit you on Facebook? What are they going to get if they fan you? You know, get news and updates on, you know, let's say you're EMC Corporation. You could say, fan us on Facebook to get critical updates on information security and data storage. Now, that may not matter to you, but if you're an IT person,
it's going to matter to them.
Right. So don't just say, hey, you know, gee, see us on Facebook. It's like I was in Logan Airport, and they had a sign, Terminal C, literally an airport terminal, is on Facebook. Like, why would I want to fan that? So you gotta look at two things. When you're looking at an ad, whether it's online or offline, you want to look at it and you want to say, what do I want people to do right now? I'm looking at an ad. I have an online call to action. It's a print ad. It's a banner. It's whatever it is. Okay? What do I want people to do right now? Typically you want them to click. Okay, why? Why would they want to do that? You have to give them that reason. Secondly, when they get to the landing page, you have to ask the same question. What do I want people to do right now? They're sitting there, they're staring at my landing page or my web page. You know, have I determined what I want them to do here, and have I given the user a compelling reason to complete that transaction or that conversion event? So you have to ask these very pragmatic, very simple questions when you're putting content out there, when you're putting ads out there, and when you're driving people to a page. Simply say, what do I want people to do right now?
And Harry, that is really critical. And that's kind of what a lot of entrepreneurs and social media people are trying to figure out. When I say social media, I don't mean social media people. I mean actually the business owners who are grappling with social media.
Yeah.
And that's probably where you come in, is that there's that fine line of doing it yourself or having someone do it for you because you're missing the moment, because you're not clear on what to do.
Yeah, most companies we work with now, remember I talked about when we first started, no one was doing this. Most of the business we get now, people are already doing search and some form of social, and they're doing their email, and they're doing all this stuff already. They come to us because they want to do it better.
Better.
They want it infused with all those best practices. They want to tie it together. They want to measure it, and they want to optimize it. They want to know what's working and what's not working so we can continually improve performance.
Now, Harry, we have about 3 minutes. And I got to ask you this question because, you know, you want to make sure that you please your clients. Do you have a Harley?
I have to confess that I do not have a Harley.
I was looking through your client roster, and I'm like, I wonder if he just had to get a Harley so that he could, really make his client happy and ride that Harley and know just what it feels like when the wind blows through his hair.
Yeah, in full disclosure, we launched Harley's total social media platform, and once they got up to around 800,000 fans, they realized this is important enough to take over and bring in-house. But I am too much of a wimp to drive a Harley. The guy who worked on Harley, although the account manager, Shane Kelly, did ride a Harley, so we had him to fall back on. But they gave me a real hard time about that. But I do use Coldies religiously.
And do you have a Samsonite luggage?
Of course. I love that. You got to go four-wheeling. You got to get the four-wheel spinner Samsonite. It's awesome. I just want to give a quick shout-out.
And once you buy a Samsonite, that's it. You don't go back.
No. I'd like to give a quick shout-out. We have 15 international partners called, and we've come together as a group called Yamando, and all of our partners and one of our employees, Michael Orlinsky, they're listening to this, and they're in Dubai right now having a good time. So I just want to give a shout out to all
Hello,
my Yamando
Dubai.
International partners in Dubai. If there's anything else I can answer, please ask.
Well, Harry, we only have 1 minute. In that one minute, I want you to tell us where to find you and where do we go if we want to contact Harry Gold.
Sure. So you can find me on the web at overdriveinteractive.com. And that's all one word, overdriveinteractive.com. You know, please come to my site, check it out, download the map. I also love doing interviews and speaking engagements. And, you know, if anyone ever has a question or anything like that, feel free to reach out to me. If you fill out the form on our site, the email goes right to me. So,
perfect.
So
Harry,
I will see you.
Thank you so much. You're wonderful. And goodbye to those folks in Dubai. Thanks for listening to Holly's Digital Advice right here on W4WN. And we will see you next week. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We'll be right back.